We would like to dedicate this episode to Liliana Elena González Castro
and Jouko Kykkänen.
Welcome everyone to the 22nd episode of the Board Game OK podcast. A podcast about board games and the hobby of board gaming, recorded in wet because it snowed and now it's too hot and the snow have melted, Helsinki, Finland. I'm one of your hosts, Luis, and with me is your co-host, Jonas.
Morjesta.
In this episode, we're leaving out the board game reviews to focus on our very first top 10 list. The way this will work is that we have decided a topic, which is top 10 troops on a map game. Troops on a map? Some people call it dudes on a map.
Yeah, I wondered why you said troops on a map. I always assumed people say troops on a map instead of a dudes on a map because dude can be interpreted as male specific.
Yeah.
But that's just been my guess. I never looked into it much further.
Yeah, I never did either. I was just, from what I found, I think people call it dudes, people call it troops. But then troops is focusing too much on fighting and war and stuff like that. And sometimes it's not about that. It's more about civilization. But I guess...
Oh, I'm going to ask you so many questions about most that of them comment.
Most of them are war-related games, I guess. Anyway, the way this top 10 will work is that we have a point system where I'm making the top 10 list and Jonas is trying to guess the games that are in my top 10. Prior to this episode, Jonas provided me with a list of 10 games that he thought could be on that list, and I replied back with a list of another 10 games that could potentially be on that list. So in total, we have a list of 20 games that Jonas can pick from, and he will then create a list that he thinks corresponds to my top 10 list. Correct, Jonas?
That is correct. I will make a secret list where I will try to predict what is Lewis's top 10 for these troops on a map games. In the top 10, for every game I get correct in the top 10, I will get 1 point. When we enter top 5, now every game I get correct, I will actually get 3 points.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we enter top 3, every game I get correct there will earn me 5 points. And finally, if I get the very tippy-top top 1 correct, I will get 10 points. So that will, in total, result in 50 points if I get absolutely everything right. I won't get everything right. I will kind of win if I get 30 out of 50. So if I get 30 points out of 50 points.
30 points out of 50 is Jonas' winning condition. And this is a game that he's playing against, against himself, against his knowledge of my likes and dislikes in board games. So Jonas, are you ready to create your list?
No, I am not. Before I will create my list, I have a couple of questions for you. First of all, what on earth is a troops on a map game? What is your definition?
Well, my definition of a troops on a map game is a game where there is troops on a map, where there's a bunch of pieces on the map that are basically allowing you to either get victory points, victory conditions, by destroying other troops on the map or by giving you area control mechanics. I don't think troops on a map, for example, is a definition of board game mechanics in Board Game Geek. When you find a troops on a map game, when you go to Board Game Geek and try to find the mechanics, they're always like area majority, area control.
Why is the distinction important? Why do we need to separate area control games from troops on a map games? I will say dudes on a map. Because guess what? It's so difficult to say troops on a map. And not only will I say dudes on a map, I will say dome. Just for further on, I will just say dome.
Dome?
Yeah, that's the abbreviation.
Ah,
dome.
Dome. I thought, okay. Dome. I don't like this. I'll say troops on the map because I can say troops pretty easily, I think. But you can say dome. That is completely fine. I thought that troops on a map also evokes a certain idea of a game. And I thought area majority or area control would include so many different games and the games that we put on this list that I wanted to kind of restrict it to a category that I would think people at home would maybe understand, that you would have a list to give me and that I would also have like a list to get back to. So that is kind of what I decided to do this. Also, this is the very first time we're doing it. So I thought it was a knowledgeable enough category, but also like maybe not the most important category that we could do a top 10 for. And therefore, I kind of wanted to try with this one. So
sure. Now, you said that it evokes a certain feeling. What is this feeling? What is this feeling that you get from a dome?
You know, there's always like this
compared to, let's say, Hansa Teutonica, which is not in this top 20.
I think it's like...
Or not top 20, but in this category of 20 games. There's no Hansa Teutonica.
Most of them would have some elements of war, some elements of fighting. Most of them would have some elements of area majority, area control, like having the most troops or the most people in a single area. But not all of them are like this. Some of them are more like, hey, you're only able to control a single area. Nobody else can be there. And therefore, it's like you're just kind of vying for control of a region maybe, or like trying to just get some other victory condition. Like, for example, some people called El Grande. Some people categorize it as troops on a map game. But I think...
But you apparently did not categorize it as a troops on a map game.
I don't think so, because there's no fighting in there.
Even though there are cards that remove enemy pieces.
Yeah, they remove pieces, but it's not the same evocation.
Uh-huh.
Like, you're not fighting. You're just all like, yes, you are trying to get control, but there's really no fighting. You're not... The fact that you're there will give you control of the board, but the fact that you're there does not necessarily mean that somebody else cannot be there, or that somebody else would significantly affect. I don't know. It could be considered troops in the map. I don't think so.
Okay. You said that it doesn't have to be about war. So what's a dome that's not about fighting and war?
I think that maybe all of them. Like, I was thinking, I didn't want to spoil the list, so I was thinking one of them is more about expanding your civilization. Maybe they are actually most of them, or all of them, about some war or some fighting. And if they're not, then maybe that's why they're not troops on a map.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then troops on a map makes even more sense.
And then we have this top 10 dome game list. And you said this is your list. And I need to think about your preferences, etc. So is this just a list of 10 games out of these 20 games that Luis likes the most? One being the game that Luis likes the most, or the 10 being the least, or like in the middle? Or are these ordered so that the number one game is the Domist of Dome?
Ah, no, this is about the games that I would like to play, or that I would recommend people to play the most, maybe.
No, which one it is? Well, the games you like to play, or the games you want to recommend to people? Are you pursuing some kind of statement of what the list should be in the hobby? Or is this just one person in the universe saying that, hey, here's my top 10 Dome list. Only my opinions.
My opinions.
Your opinions only.
For now, yes.
Okay, I am ready to make my list.
But my opinions are important. Are you going to edit this out?
This part. I think this would be very fun to leave in.
I already told Jonas that I use PubMeeple to create this list, which is a ranking system where you can add a list of games, in which case I added the list of 20 games. And the way it helps you rank them is it makes comparisons. It puts one against another and you decide which one would you prefer this one over that one. It doesn't tell anything about it. Not like, do you prefer to play it or do you like the most? It's just like you choose one of them. And through a round of comparisons with all of the games, it gives you a prioritized list. It's like the one that you compare the best will be on the top. And then the very one on the bottom is the one that you basically never preferred over any other game. It's the very first time I used this system to rank anything. And it was interesting because I did make some changes at the end, but I mostly respected the list. And now that you have made the list, to be completely honest, sometimes it was very hard to choose.
So are you talking to the listener or the...
To you and to the listener.
I thought that you started with the listener and then it was
Now that you have made the list. And now that Jonas has made the list.
So this is, the next part is just for Jonas.
Now it's
so
for Jonas.
Lois, tell me.
It was really very hard to rank some of them. So like, which one do I prefer? And then at the end, I decided like, which one would I like to play the most right now? And which one would I recommend somebody to try out if they were asking me about a recommendation?
So I have made the list now, so this will not affect any of the ordering in the list. My next question.
Okay.
Which is, what is the number after which the good games start?
What is the number after which the good games start?
What is the number after which the good games start?
I honestly think all of these 20 games can be considered really good games. Some of them I just haven't played. Some of them I have played too little. And one of them I don't like.
Okay. Yeah, I think my kind of honeymoon with area control games, not area control games, specifically dudes on a map games.
Yeah, it's over.
Is over.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought about my list. And first of all, the list of 20 games contains games I would not consider to be Dudes on a Map games at all. And those include games that I have submitted to you. Because, you know, just because I thought that, well, this, some people consider this to be a dome, so why not add it here? But if I would think about the kind of the pure Dudes on a Map games, I think there were maybe three that would be games that I would be still interested in playing and would be willing to give some sort of recommendation for, maybe. And, well, what is a Dudes on a Map game for me? For me, the main experience needs to be adults playing with toys. In order to have like that proper dome experience, you have to have plastic. First of all, you have to have plastic. You can have wooden things also if you have that silk screen printing on them. Mm-hmm. That's perfectly fine. But you need to have more than just a cube and just a meeple.
Mm.
I know it doesn't have to do anything with mechanics. It adds to the dome feeling. That's the dude part of the Dudes on a Map. Then we need the map part. So we need a map. And within a map, that means distance. So there is at least one game that I'm expecting to be on your list where I would argue that, well, that map, not really a map, more of just connected spaces to one central connect space. Finally, we need combat, and we need something to happen during the combat. So I think in a Dudes on a Map game, the combat cannot be just one-to-one. Cubes get removed. No, there has to be something involved. Either dice rolling or some cards getting played, something has to happen so that the battle is something that will kind of like draw the attention of the table when it happens.
Yeah.
I think proper dome games also have upgrades for your troops. So you don't just start with your basic, you know, soldiers and you end the game with your soldiers. You just have more soldiers in the end. No, you have to have some kind of upgrades. So your army develops throughout the game. I think that's also a big part of domes.
So these are kind of like I want to hear more about that when in some of these games, maybe.
Okay, but yeah, should we start?
We should start. So the very first game, number 10 on my list, is a game called Shogun. Or it's a game that used to be called Shogun. I think it has had different names. The only version I played is called Shogun. It has been called Samurai Swords, or it's had been called also nowadays Ikusa or something like that. The history of this game is that Milton Bradley had so much success with a game called Risk, which people might know about, that they decided to kind of try to figure out how they could expand the different game mechanics. And this is where Access and Allies and other games like that created. And one of the games that they created in this Game Master series, which it was called, was Shogun, which basically is Risk, but in feudal Japan. And it has very interesting mechanics, which you might recognize from different Troops on the Map games, where like you have a screen where you are betting coins behind your screen in order to take different actions and to hire different troops and to do different things. So basically, it's a more complex Japan-themed with some bidding mechanics Risk. And I think this is an amazing game. This is a game that I would like to be able to play more, but I don't own. And it is a super interesting game. If you like Risk or Risk-like games, this is the game that you should be playing instead.
Yeah, this game was not on my list, but I'm not going to criticize you. The reason why it was not on my list was that I had never played this. When I got your list of 10 games with the Shogun, I thought that, have you even played this? I think you're
thought it was the other Shogun.
You know, the other Shogun?
Yeah.
Which Shogun are we talking about? Are we talking about Shogun 2006?
No, we're talking about, I think you find it, Ikusa, 1986. Oh, you find it?
Yeah. What on earth is this game? What's happening here? Is this Risk?
It's Risk for Japanese. Japanese Risk.
Japanese. Okay, wow. What a great start. No, when you submitted Shogun, I assumed you mean the game Shogun that's kind of like more known. In general, yeah, you're showing me a picture of Shogun. Yes, I believe
there was
an edition of Shogun. Oh, yeah, but no, you know what? But no matter which version of Shogun would have been on the list, I would not have put it on top 10. The Shogun that I was talking about is a game that I would be very curious to try out at some point. This Shogun based on Risk. Well, you know,
do you
what?
Like Risk?
I've never played Risk.
Yeah,
I'm willing to play Risk Legacy, which I also like, just like some games that were not in the 20 that I just realized that should have been there.
Mm.
Risk Legacy.
I thought about putting it, but I haven't played it.
Me neither. But I think that would be the one game I would be interested in playing.
Yes.
Another game, Senshi.
Is that the one we played with the families?
Yeah.
Mm.
So in Senshi, you're in Japan. You're doing feudal Japanese war fighting. The cool part of Senshi is the diplomacy phase, where you can, for example, trade family members that you can hold hostage. So when people attack you, you can show them like, your grandmother is here. Do you want a bad time to happen to grandmother?
I 100% agree. That one was not on the list. But this Ikusa, I mean, you have never played Risk, but it adds to the risk and the kind of randomness of Risk with just adding, like throwing dice and seeing who wins. It also has this element of trying to bluff with the bidding mechanics that you start every round with, like where you're like putting different amount of money in the different actions and then trying to bid for turn order, for building units, for hiring assassins and stuff like that. So it's a little bit more complex and advanced version of Risk, which I think makes the game significantly better. It's still a little bit more of like, hey, just conquer the entire map type of thing, which can get heavy and can get long, but it still adds a bit more interesting mechanics to it.
Yeah, interesting. Playing time, 240 to 360 minutes. I don't know if I have that in me for a Risk-like game, especially if there's Risk Legacy.
Yeah, designer of Ikusa is Michael Gray.
Okay, we are off to a very bad start. Let's start with a game that no one knows about.
That's why I'm a board gamer. I'm like, I'm an expert in historic games, Jonas.
Okay. So what do you have at number 9?
All right. My number 9, let me find it, is a little known game called Cyclades Legendary Edition. Now, I am actually putting Cyclades, the basic Cyclades here, because I have not yet played the Legendary Edition.
Yeah, I submitted Cyclades Legendary Edition to the list, but you know, yeah, and I know you had not played it. I could have just put Cyclades.
I didn't want to trick you. So yeah. I was like, I do like this game and I feel he's going to put it on the list. And if I don't put it, it would be cheating Jonas.
Yeah. The only reason why I submitted the Legacy Edition, Legendary Edition, is because I think it's a much better version of Cyclades. But, you know, deep down, the same game.
Yeah. This game, we have talked about it, right?
You have mentioned that it's one of these games that you are looking forward to in 2025.
Mm.
You have zero plays of Cyclades Legendary Edition.
Yeah.
We have tried to organize a game for you to play it. No. I have managed to play it now 2 times.
Yeah.
And I have been keeping the third game away so that you can also play it so we can discuss it in the podcast so that we have both played it.
Yes. So this is a game where you are mostly bidding for the favors of gods. And these gods will allow you to do a specific action during the game. If you do not get the favor of the gods, you cannot, which means that if you don't have money, you cannot then take an action, which makes very interesting decision space.
Yeah, I don't know if I would call the decision space interesting. I think it's more like you just see what makes the obvious sense for you. You bid for that god, you do it, then someone else does the same thing. You build up your economy, that's the only decision you have to make in the game. Do you collect your economy or not? Right answer is yes, you need to build up your economy. Do not build your economy. And then after that, it's just the game plays itself. Whatever gods come in, you check what's there. There are a couple of moments in the bidding where you get to make some nice moves. But guess what? It would be nicer if you would get to make those moves more often in the game instead of like sitting there for 3 hours of just mostly just looking at what gods come out and have this like extremely elongated end game.
Somebody likes the game, it seems.
Well, I had it at number 3 because you said that this is based on your tastes.
Yes.
Yeah, and I know you like Cyclades, and we have had the review of Cyclades. I loathe Cyclades. I do not enjoy the game at all. If you like that bidding mechanism, I think Amun-Re kind of like is the better game with that bidding mechanism where you get to bump people off.
Is this the troops on a map game?
That's not a troops on a map game. So no, you don't get the troops on a map experience, but you get the bumping experience.
Well, then it doesn't make sense. The troops on a map makes the game.
Yeah, the troops add to the game. The gods take away from the game.
Is it so that in the Legendary Edition, you have more gods than you can put?
You have gods and then you have heroes. It gets more random. But here's the thing. the Legendary Edition, it leans into the randomness. Now, let's not go further into the Legendary Edition because let's save it for another episode. Let's talk about it more later on. But if we don't end up playing Legendary Edition by the end of the year, then when we catch up on the last year's episodes, then I will give you my Cyclades Legendary Edition a quick review.
All right. So that was my number 9, Cyclades, not Legendary Edition. And it's designed by Bruno Catala and Ludovic Maublanc.
And I have opened my score account. So I have 1 point.
Are you going to keep score or do you want me to keep score for you?
Let's see how far I will get with my math skills.
All right. Number eight, I think is going to be a surprise for you. Or I would be impressed if this one is on your list.
Well, I hope it's not going to be a surprise because I would really want to get the point.
This is Dune War for Arrakis.
I had Dune War for Arrakis as number one for you.
You had Dune War for Arrakis as number one?
Yeah, because I remember you liking this game.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this game. In this game, it's basically a troops on a map game where you're fighting. Like, one side is the Harkonnen and the other side is the Atreides. So basically, one side is the good guys from the movie and one side is the bad guys from the movie. You have boards that allow you to take actions. And the way you take actions is that you roll some dice and then you put these dice on the action spaces of your board. You can either play it 1v1 or you can play it 2v2. If you're 1v1, then you would have both boards. And if you're 2v2, then you would split one board for each person on the team. It's kind of public information. You have to discuss kind of on top of the table. And the victory conditions are a little bit different. As a Harkonnen, you just have to pretty much just destroy the Atreides. And as the Atreides, as the good guys, you have like a track that you're trying to move, three different kind of tracks on the board. And you have an end goal that is uncertain of like, where do you want those three tracks to be? So.
And have you played War of the Ring?
I have not played War of the Ring.
Okay, but it was in the list you submitted.
Yes.
War of the Ring there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Dune War for Arrakis, my assumption is that it's very similar to the War of the Ring.
It was a kind of a re-implementation. It's the same designers. So it's Marco Maggi and Francesco Nepitello are
the
designers. There's
some DNA shared there, right?
The DNA is shared, but everybody who plays it that does not particularly care about the IPs say that this is a better game. This is a better implementation that it can show like kind of the learnings from War of the Ring.
When Dune 2 came out in the cinemas, me and Chilla went to watch it. I really got into the Dune world, even though I had not read the books. Dune War for Arrakis, it was kind of on my wish list at that moment because I thought that, hey, it would be so fun to keep reliving the movie. But I still, it would have been such a risky acquisition because I don't know if Chilla would have gotten into this game.
I think this is an expensive game. However, so it's like that's something that you have to keep in mind when purchasing it. It's also a pretty long game, I think. It can get pretty long.
Yeah, that's the other thing. That I think would have been kind of like the last straw on the camel's back, the length of the game.
Yeah.
How long have your games taken?
Like at least 3.5 hours.
Yeah, it would have been way too long for me.
Here it says 120. Obviously, maybe not the most knowledgeable. I think if you played over and over with the same person, probably you can get to this 120 playing time that Board Game Geek says, 2 hours. But I don't think that's accurate.
Can I get a quick comment from you?
Yeah.
So this is number 8. Mm-hmm. Why is this higher on than Cyclades and Shogun or whatever the other Ikusa?
Why is this higher? I think it's Pop Meeple's fault, kind of.
Okay.
I think it was like the comparison made it land kind of there. I even move it one space down because I was like, yeah, this is not okay. I mean, I think right now, if I had to decide, for example, between some other games right now. And again, this is a weird thing when you're comparing one to the other. Like, if I had to choose right now which one to play, I like both. Which one would I choose to play?
So is this like, it's like a very long explanation of, or like a very long answer of like, well, this one is higher because I like this more.
yes.
Which, okay, we can end the conversation there. We need to keep going. So what's on number 7?
Number 7 is A War of Whispers. Where did you have this on the list?
I did not have this on the list because I remember you telling, first of all, that you hate this game.
What?
Yeah.
I have this game as an 8.5 in Board Game Geek.
Okay.
No, I definitely do not hate this game.
Yeah, I remember when the first time you had played this, or was it a joke then when you said that, oh, that game sucks?
Yeah, maybe it was a joke. I really enjoyed every time we played this game.
Yeah, I took that joke way too seriously.
Yeah, I think this is designed by Jeremy Stoitfus. I don't know how to pronounce that game. I think this is a very interesting game in the sense that, as you know, Jonas, but the people at home I might not know, you do not control a single faction. You basically are moving different factions by making decisions during the game of where do you want to go on the board. So therefore, like, everybody's trying to control different factions. And the thematic thing is like, you are the whisperers behind the veil. You are the puppet masters. You're not really the factions that are fighting for control. And the way you win the game at the end is by having bet on which faction will have kind of the most power, the most influence in the map. You multiply kind of the influence, the power, the control by the kind of the bets that you made in your own personal board, and whoever has the most points wins.
Yeah, it's kind of like invest in these fighting factions instead of being one of these fighting factions. This game was one of the games where I thought that, well, I would not personally categorize this as a Dome. But if we would follow my categorization of Dome games, well, then we wouldn't have 10 games to even rank here.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, this is just my, you know, my definition.
But you said that domes were like map. It has a map.
It has a map. Do we have dudes?
Well, you do have dudes and you move them around. Well, they're cubes in this case.
Exactly. Cube is not a dude. Cube is not a dude.
You also have, what is it called? The little, well, the dudes could be plastic in some versions of the game, by the way. But you have the, what is it called? Like the kind of the strongholds, remember? And those are plastic, right?
If you have the upgraded version, the copy I used to own had cardboard shits.
Hmm.
There's no upgrading of your troops. Well, there is, you know, you don't own the troops, but there's no upgrading of the troops. The battles, the way they happen, it's just one-to-one. These two cubes move here. These cubes die here. Because of this, I'm like, dome, really? If I'm on a dome mood, would I get my dome groove on with War of Whispers? I don't think so. I still enjoy it. And when it comes to this kind of like stock games where you don't own anyone, but, you know, you make investments, I think War of Whispers falls behind a lot to Seven Empires, which let's not talk about it more. Maybe it's on the list. Maybe it's not on the list. Another game I would not have considered Dome, but let's see.
All right. So you did not have this on the list, right?
Yeah, no. And why, we are at number seven.
We're now at number seven.
Now, why is War of Whispers a better Dome game than Dune War for Arrakis?
I don't know. I think
it
better.
You like it better?
Yeah. I like it better.
Oh, yeah.
Again, Pop Meeple makes it very weird decisions when you're like ranking different things. You're like, okay. Also, this game, it's easier to get to the table than War of Arrakis, than Dune War of Arrakis. War for Arrakis.
So is Uno.
Yes, but Uno is not a Dome.
No, but I'm just saying that is Uno a greater game because it's easier to get on the table than either of these games?
No.
If you would do all best games of all time.
No, Jonas. That is correct. You are right. Anyway, number six.
Number six.
Are you ready to move on?
Yes.
Number six, I think, is another game that you will not have on the list.
I don't like this already.
It is Small World.
Yeah, I do not have this on the list because
it's a Dome?
I don't think it's a Dome. I thought that this game is way too simple for Lewis. What do I have? I have 2 points.
2 points.
We are number six.
You're number six, but you're about to start to get into the big points area.
Yeah,
right?
Well, I've already lost my number one position, but okay, Small World. Why why is Small World better Dome than War of Whispers, Dune War for Arrakis, Ikusa, and Cyclades?
Have you ever played Small World?
Yes, I have. Small World was, you know, one of those early games that really got me into the hobby. I used to love it. I still really
enjoy it. Like, it's one of those that I almost never suggest to play.
Yeah.
How about you? Sorry.
I would never suggest to play it either, but I have so much respect for Small World, and it's a game that I don't mind recommending to people who are kind of like just starting out in the hobby, because that whole build your own fantasy race thing, it's just so much fun. And the rules are simple.
And again, like, I think maybe I cheated you by doing this through Pop Meeple, but I also like didn't know how to rank things. But it's like when you're comparing things, or at least when I was comparing things, that's the type of thoughts that I started thinking, like, okay, Would I like to play this if somebody suggested it? Would I like to recommend this if somebody suggested over Doing War for Arrakis? Would this be a game that would be easier to get to? So a lot of things can come into like that comparison. You're like standing in front of the screen thinking for 5 minutes and be like, okay, which one do I click? Because you're just clicking one or the other, right?
Yeah. At SPLSN, we had this inside joke that about luck factor. Lewis had a lot of issue with luck factor with different games. Now that I'm playing this game, I will tell you, the luck factor of this top 10 list is no. It's
but
too
wait,
much.
Wait. There's no luck. Like all of the comparisons, I think, to Pong Meeple are made. So if you haven't compared one to another, you will get to compare them.
Oh yeah, Pong Meeple is not random. Okay. I'm just saying that your thought process is random.
No, it's not so random. It's like that's what we were saying before the episode started, right? Like if we played more games together and we maybe even exclusively play with each other, it would be really easy for you to make this list and really easy for you to pretty much know everything. Or if we were to make a similar list in the future in like 3 years after doing the podcast, maybe you would have more information to go by. But right now it's like very little information. So
absolutely. And you argued that my winning score should be 30 and not 25. Yeah. Small World, the reason why I'm not like loving it anymore is that when you play it more, you notice that there isn't actually combat that happens in Small World. Mm. What happens is that when it gets to your turn, you just kind of see, well, what is the best way for me to maximize my points?
Yeah.
And after that, you also might notice that, well, if that's how I make the decisions on my turn, well, how much interaction there is? Because you're not really putting your troops to block specific people out of anywhere. You just kind of like try to maximize your own personal score.
I played Small World where you're like just blocking people, but maybe then you're not playing to win. You're just playing to have fun.
Maybe it's like if you get like too kind of try hardy in Small World, and there is still moments of like blocking. There are still moments there. It's just that they are, how do you say it? Few and far?
Far apart?
Yeah. Mm. Something like that. Let's put in edit the correct English pronunciation, like a proper British pronunciation of the right idiom here.
Okay. But Small World, designed by Philip Keyards. Keyards. Interesting name. All right. 2 points for Jonas.
Where are we now? Are we heading to?
We are heading to the five.
Top five. So now, everything I get right, I will get 3 points.
Everything you get right, you get 3 points. Plus 1 point, right?
Yeah, plus 1 point.
Yeah, so everything you get right, you get 4 points, technically.
That's true.
Yes. So, Jonas, the next game on the list, number five, is Cthulhu Wars.
I have it on my list, just on number nine.
Okay, so then you get 1 point.
I get 1 point.
Designed by Sandy Peterson and Lincoln Peterson, this is a game that you introduced to us.
And you have played it once.
I played it twice.
I played it twice. Did we play it 2 times?
Yeah, I've only played with you.
Ah, I remember us playing only 1 time. And the reason why it was so low on the list was because I remember the first time we played it, it was not a good game of Cthulhu Wars. I felt that I was not able to show you kind of all the funness that can happen in Cthulhu Wars. It was just somehow like a lackluster play.
I think so too. I think everybody felt, but I think the second time we played, it completely reversed the roles. It was like, okay, I can see how this game is good. I think everybody also played a bit differently and played maybe more aggressively. And I think everybody had more fun with their factions. We played, I think, with the same people the second time even.
That was a 4-player game. Chilla was with us on the first time we played. That was like a 5-player game.
Mm-hmm.
And then Chilla was not with us on the 4-player game. That was considerably better PlayStation.
Ooh, what does that say?
It doesn't say anything. Chilla was not the problem here.
It's the fifth person,
I would have loved to have Chilla also there on that second game. And even though it was like a bit of a lackluster play, it was still like so fun to have all 5 of us.
Yeah.
You know, there putting our monsters on the board.
Also, I think the second time I won the game, I think.
Let's see. You did win.
Yeah. Maybe that's why I love it
so much.
I should have checked that stat.
I should have checked. Yeah. Then I would have known to put it on number 5.
And again, this baby, the luck factor that you say is like, which game would I like to play if I got the choice when you're doing these comparisons? And I'm like, Cthulhu War. I was surprised to see it so high on the list. But I'm like, hey, that still, I'm not gonna move it.
Yeah, if I would rank these games as in what's the domest of the dome, Cthulhu Wars would be my number 1, and there's no question about it. It is that ultimate adults playing with toys game.
Mm.
We got dudes. These monsters are massive.
Mm-hmm.
We have the map, mm-hmm. and with, you know, distance between the locations. We got combat. We got dice combat. Mm-hmm. So you have to throw dice.
Good old dice.
Yeah. You have upgrades for your troops. And that's like the biggest part of the game is like thinking, yeah. oh, what do I want to upgrade?
Yeah.
And we have all different types of monsters that you can put on the board. What else? No, I think that's it. You don't need anything more.
See, I think if you played Ikusa, you would be like, oh, is Ikusa a more dudes on the map game than this one? Because, you know, you have armies that you can buy people to put in their armies. Besides the fact that you have the little dudes on the map, you have three special armies that you kind of keep upgrading. And every time they fight, they gain experience. So they are all of the things that you're saying Ikusa covers pretty well.
Yeah, I gave you a hard time on Ikusa, but the fact that it's made in the 80s and still, you know, in print and, you know, so high up, like it's not in the top 1,000, but it's almost in the top 1,000 in the BGG. I am curious about it. The only thing, the biggest deterrent is that playing time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm looking at that playing time and I'm thinking that I could play, what, Friedrich there? I could play Maria.
You could play both of them together.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's one of those that, again, like, you said you haven't played Risk. I think that's a problem with Risk. It's like, it can go very long. And there's player elimination, et cetera, et cetera. So it has those 80 board game problems, for sure. But a little bit nicer. Anyway, we're coming back to Ikusa just in the Cthulhu Wars topic. But I was just like, hey, that's also a pretty dome game.
Is there anything a listener should take into consideration about your recommendation of Cthulhu Wars?
I guess that it's not available to print. Like, you cannot get Cthulhu Wars unless you're in the secondhand market.
I think maybe there is the game available. It is so expensive.
So expensive.
Yeah. And you kind of want to get those extra factions, which make it even more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, should we go to number four?
Number four is Kemet, Blood and Sand.
I had it on number six.
Oh, this is one point. Yeah, we should definitely reassess the winning condition. Anyway, Kemet, Blood and Sand is a game of the Matago trilogy, which we will not talk more about because all of these games are dumb games. The designers are Jacques Barriot and Guillaume Montiache. It's a game where you have troops on a map. There is a map. It's themed around ancient Egypt. And you have a board where you are taking different actions and you have action points that you're spending in order to move around the board, fight. No, wait, you don't fight.
Lewis, in all of these games, most of these games, you have action points. Yeah. You move on the board, you fight. What's the thing with Kemet? What's the thing that makes Kemet unique?
What's the thing that makes Kemet unique? I was trying to say that the action points were a pretty nice thing because you don't get action points in all of these games. But anyway, the thing that makes Kemet unique, or at least one of the big selling factors of Kemet, is that you have pyramids or that are connected to a power and you have like different power upgrades. Power of great tech tracks, in a way.
Exactly. It's tech tree.
Tech tree.
We have our tech tree here.
And you choose four colors, four tech trees to go up on every game, I think?
Maybe three. It depends so much on the player count, what is even available. But at least two, I think you might. I think you have a space for three pyramids.
Yeah, you yourself, but colors. I think there's four. No, but I think there's four colors.
Oh, that depends
the
on the player count and the different versions.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, but yeah, you have space for three, so you're normally going on this three out of the whatever number of tech trees there is, and each one of these tech trees will give you like different abilities, like you upgrade your troops.
You know, and it's also like the flavor of the tech track. Mm. You know, blue, it's all about defense. Red,
yeah.
Aggression.
Yeah.
The color of blood. Black, it's kind of trickster
yes.
powers. White, all about economy.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, go ahead.
No, and is there anything, because I'm going to jump into the next great thing about, or another unique thing about Kemet. So is there anything you want to talk about the tech
No,
tricks?
Just go ahead.
Yeah. I think the second unique selling point of Kemet is that this is the game that will incentivize players to attack each other the most.
Mm-hmm.
If you get into a combat and if you win that combat as the aggressor, you get one victory point that no one can take you from that game. And is it like you play until 8 or 9 victory points?
Depending
Whatever.
On the number of players, yeah.
It's like more than 10% of the points you need to gather. So you are always out for blood. You are just looking, where's the weak army? Where I'm going to strike and I'm going to kill them all.
See, why, if you like it so much, you put it so low?
Because I thought that you would not be able to appreciate the finesse. Is that quite, is that even a word? A finesse of Kemet?
I guess the finesse of Kemet, I guess.
This dome mood, what did you say? The sense you get from the domes.
Yeah.
It is there in Kemet.
The feeling that it evokes.
Yes.
100%. This is a super dome. And I'm calling them domes. See, you're converting me. No, this is the troopest on a mapest game, which sounds really nice.
Yet it's only on a 4. So there are still 3.
Yeah. This is one of the troopest on a map.
Can
this
I get
is
even
a really good game. This is a really good game. And this is number 4. Kemet, Blood and Sand. All right. We go to number 3. I think this one you must get right. You must have at least 4 points for this one. And number 3, from now on, if you get it right, you'll be getting actually 9 points.
Yeah, so it would be
9
5
points for
plus 3 plus 1. That is true.
If it's within the 3, if not, you would get maybe 5 points. Sorry, 3 points or maybe just 1.
Only have one more slot chance in my top 3 that has not been taken yet, so.
All right. So, sorry to hear that you're not going to win this game, I don't think, Jonas, but this is Ankh, Gods of Egypt.
Number 4.
Okay, so this you get 4 points
four
for.
4 points, yeah.
This is a game by Erik M. Lang. It's a very thematically very similar to Kemet, Blood and Sand, where you have like your troops in Egypt, you have your gods that you are interacting. Now, the main difference is that here...
Oh, can I ask you the big question?
Yes.
Can you move these troops? Can they fight? Do you have action points that you can spend?
Are you making fun of me?
No. I'm really curious.
So you do not have action points. Yeah. You take an action that basically determines what you're doing on that round. So basically you have action tracks that are shared by everybody.
Okay. To be honest, I was...
I know you were making fun of me. Yes. But that's what I'm saying. Here you don't have action points. And in Kemet, you do. You have the economy, where if you don't have enough action points, that is, a significant factor of how you need to play the game. Here is not. I mean, yes, but here is different in the sense that you have the shared action tracks, where that changes the decision point. You always have 2 actions on your turn, and sometimes you really want to do something, but that every time you take an action, you advance the action track, which means that even though you want to do it, maybe you don't want to do it because then it would trigger an event that would be more beneficial for your opponents, in which case then you would be like, okay, I'm not going to do that action. I'm going to do something else. Or I'm going to do a less beneficial action, but this will not impact my opponents in a better way. And I think that's, for example, Kemet doesn't have that at all. Kemet,
this
you have
is,
your
yeah.
own
yeah.
action points that are very fundamental for the game.
No, this is completely a unique point, a unique mechanic. I've played Ankh only once, a long, long, long time ago, so I barely remember anything about it. But what I do remember is that shared action board and looking at the different events that are coming up and not wanting to take specific actions because you don't want that thing to happen on someone's turn. And the events are so cool.
Yeah.
The camels that come on the board and they break the map into sections, which I think is amazing. Imagine like a dudes on a map game where you can change the map, you can split one of the regions into 2 halves. That's so cool.
So I guess you would like to play this game again.
Yes.
Yeah. This way it's quite high because I think this is a very enjoyable game. You also have your own board. Well, you have your own god, which gives you like special power. Everybody has a special power. And you have your own board that where you're like kind of also upgrading your troops or upgrading your powers to do different things. But in essence, like you move your troops and you're fighting for control, which will give you different victory points, or how did they call them here? Devotion points, I think.
Are they not prestige points?
I think
that's
they're devotion
so disappointing.
Points.
I think prestige points are my favorite points. Luis, you're about to hit the 1 minute mark.
Okay.
And you still have not discussed the merge.
The famous merge, hated by some, lauded by others. Basically, at some point during higher player count games, if you are below a certain threshold of points, first of all, you get kind of eliminated if you are below a certain threshold of points. If you're not below a certain threshold of points, then the last 2 players that are behind in the board merge into a single god, which means that like they don't have enough devotion points to be considered a single god, they needed to kind of become like, just like, hey, bring me your followers and I'll bring you my followers. And then maybe we're a better influencer in Instagram that way. And yeah, so the famous merch. Do you remember even the merch?
Yes, I do. I was the other part of the merch. I had no issue about it. I was so out of the game. And then I got to have this somewhat of a comeback with another player at the table. It was an event in the game, a really big event. So it added this extra arc to the game and it added like a story. Well, no, we didn't do good with our merch. God, we lost still. But, you know, there was this glimmer of hope.
Was I merged with you? No.
I don't remember who merged with me.
It was me. Well, I merged. I don't remember if it was in that game. But yeah, I think
it would explain why I did so bad if you were the one who merged with me.
The thing is, like, the first time I saw the merch, I think I was not part of the merch. And I was like, oh, that sucks. That probably sucks. But then I think I played several, or even pretty much in every game. As soon as you merge, it significantly changes the powers that you can do, and it significantly actually affects your chances of winning. Without merging, you would have zero chances. And even sometimes with merging, there's not, like, you're so far behind or the person is so far ahead that it's very almost impossible to win. But it gives you the fighting chance, especially for those two people. Now, if you are the third to last, like in a game of five, and you're very close to those other two, I think it would be really sucky because then, like, you're basically out of the game where the merch people might still have a chance. So anyway, Angst, God of Egypt, great dudes on a map game.
Number three. All right, let's hear number two.
Number two is Root.
Right on the money. Number two, Root. Yeah, I got that one.
So that is
100% correct.
That is 8 points for you. 9 points.
Nine points.
Yes. See? See how you can easily go from 4 points to suddenly 13 points. So 30 was the right thing if you had thought about your list a bit more.
Yeah, I am 17 points at the moment. Yeah.
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 70 points. Okay. Yeah. Root, designed by Cole Worley. A game that I've complained a lot, but I still, every time somebody says, do you want to play it? I play it. A game that is really hard to introduce to new people, because the mechanics are a little bit weird, especially for people that haven't played before. But on places like our meetup, where there's a bunch of people that have played Root many times before, it's apparently a very easy game to bring to the table. And that has changed, I think, my appreciation for the game in the way that it's easier to play. It's not as frustrating to play a game of Root anymore. Whereas, like, it makes it more enjoyable, it makes it fast, it makes it interesting to take a new faction and maybe try to explore what you can do with it. And again, then the time investment, the kind of the frustrating parts that maybe I have gotten through Root in the past, where it's like this, like, oh, playing with a new player or like playing inefficiently, I think have gone away and made my appreciation for the game a bit more. Now, still, it's a game that is interesting because I do think I would maybe recommend it to a lot of people, but with caveats, maybe.
And what are these caveats?
Again, like, hey, bear in mind that it's like the first few times that you play, maybe it's a game that you need to be on the right mindset to play. It's like it's a hard game to explain to a new player. So for a non-hobby gamer, for example, it would be hard to sell them Root. I played this with my family back home in Mexico. I bought it there. And I think they all enjoy it, but the first two times that we played, they were all like, I mean, we've only played those two times with them. And both of those times they were like, yeah, I kind of have no clue what I'm really doing, but I'm enjoying this experience.
Root is one of those games, again, that I would not put in the dome bucket. It just has so much of this war game feel to it, like a Eurofight war game, meaning that, you know, war game ideas of asymmetric factions with different power balances. But then just added this efficiency puzzle for every faction of like how to play it.
Mm-hmm.
And the battles are kind of, they're not really big events in Root. There's a battle somewhere,
Be pretty big events. Like you throw the dice.
I mean, compared to the other games that we have mentioned, they're not these moments where people like get out of the stand up and have been waiting for this massive battle.
I don't know. Maybe last couple of times I play Root, I had a lot of fun when other people were fighting. And I'm like, yeah. So Root by Cole Worley. Number two, Jonas, great guessing for the first time this episode, I think.
Yes.
And number one, I pretty sure you can figure it out by now. Do you want to take a
I could take a guess here. I think your number one is Inish.
My number one is indeed Inish. Or Inish, as somebody some people pronounce it. Designed by Christian Martinez. Another one from the Matago trilogy, where pretty simple game mechanics. You are drafting first cards and then using those cards to take actions in the map, where the actions can be putting troops, moving troops. Some of these movements initiate conflicts. And when you initiate a conflict, maybe it's one of those things that you would not consider dudes on a map, because it's like kind of like once you initiate a conflict, you like remove one and decide to fight. There's no dice rolling in this game.
But there is like a fun element to the conflict when everyone can stop at any point. Mm-hmm. We take turns removing troops.
Yeah.
And then when it's your turn, you can just stop.
Yes.
Stop the bloodshed.
Yeah.
Don't kill my dude.
Yeah.
Just let it go. Let's stop here.
Let's stop here. And you're like, okay, no, you just killed my dude. Let's not stop. I think this is, a game that is really easy to play. The winning conditions are also pretty easy to understand. Like, they're all about six, right? Have dominance over six different factions. Have presence in six different regions. Or have presence in places with six different monasteries or citadels.
Yeah, you say easy to understand, but my experience is when you have new players in a game of Inish, you will repeat six times these three different sixes.
That might be true. But still, I think with people that know how to play this game, it's a game that you can probably play in an hour very easily. Now, with all of the Matago games, you have this elongated end game where, like, if somebody's winning, everybody then gangs up on them, which I think is like the main flaw of most of these games. I think the same thing happens with Inish. Like, where
it happens, I think, in the early games when people don't know how to collect the deeds. But as later on, people get better at collecting the deeds.
And then they
it's
stop.
Kind of like, oh, now we need to stop Luis. Luis is about to win.
You can't.
Too late.
Yeah.
Too late. That train passed.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I think all of the Matago games, the more you play, the more you can maybe a bit plan for these things. But it always happens a bit. Like, we're like, even with the deeds, it's like in Inish, it's like, okay, let's gang up on Luis. Like, how can we block him from winning the next round? Same in Kemet and same in Cyclades, right?
Yeah. Although, is there an area control game where that does not happen on this list?
No, that is true. I think in every area control,
you add a lot of combat.
Yeah.
You let people know who is in lead. And surprise, surprise,
people will
go after the leader.
That is true. Unless you're really good and then they cannot block you. But yeah, it is a great game. Never played the expansion. I would love to play the expansion to see if it makes a bit difference, because I think they add interesting things there. But yeah, it's a game that I enjoy every single time I played. I do not know if I would have put it in the very first top position. I was struggling a lot when I was trying to make the list without using Pop Meeple. But that's why I ended up deciding to use Pop Meeple. Where do you have this on the list, by the way?
I had Inish on number 5. Yeah, this is... So great for me to hear of like guessing where these games are, and then Luis being like, yeah, I would not have put Inish in number one, but you know, that Pop Meeple, it makes the decisions for me. I got 21 points out of 50.
See? Almost.
9 more points and I would have made it. The thing with Inish for me is that my first game of Inish was so much fun because of that combat thing where, you know, you make those comments of like, hey, let's stop. No, you should stop. No, you stop. But then as people get better, more experienced with the game, that stuff, it just evaporates. People are too much focused on the game itself, so they don't have any more fun in the combats, or at least as much fun as in like the earlier games. And then the last game of Inish, it's just kind
that
of...
you played.
Yes, the last game of Inish that I have played, it just occurred to me that is all you need to do, you just collect those event cards until you have the ones where you can kind of like, okay, I play this, I play that, I play this, I play that. And then you win the game because no one can stop you. And you wait for others to play their blocking cards. And of course, throughout the game, also just try to collect deeds, which it's just, I'm not saying there is no decisions. I'm saying that there's still plenty of decisions. It's just the Inish I first played is not there anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now it's just too calculated.
But have you not played again with Simone? Your last game of Inish was with Simone, I assume.
I can check.
Because like with Simone, there's always this, oh, you stab me, I will stab you back, and then I don't care about winning the game. I'm just gonna have fun fighting, and then I'm gonna just.
No, my last two games, which were last year, Simone was in none of the games. So maybe that's the missing
thing. That's a missing key element of your...
Yeah, but I would add that as like a big disclaimer for the game. Only fun when playing with Simone.
All right. So maybe I was thinking about playing with Simone when I was thinking about Innis, and that's why it made it to the top of the rankings. If Simone was not a part of this discussion, then maybe Innis would be exactly on number 5. And then you would have gotten it perfectly right. All right. So what did you think about this top list, Jonas? First, did you have fun?
I had fun. Yeah. Which is the most important part.
Yeah.
I had fun. Yeah. Now, as I said to you earlier, this whole genre is something I love less and less as time passes. So it's really difficult for me to get excited about this type of a top 10 list. And I guess I'm still wondering what this list is. But as a listener, what are the key takeaways from this list? Is it, you said that the good games start where? At 10. Everything from 10
and up.
I
said that most of the games that we got in the 20,
yeah,
even in the 20, are good games,
oh, yeah,
I think.
Yeah. Where do the fantastic games start from?
I think games that you should play, I think 5 and 5 to 1, I think, are fantastic.
And is all of these games something you would recommend for everyone?
All of these games are something that I would recommend to everyone to try at least. Yes. Okay. Again, I said all of 10 games I would recommend to everyone to try if they can. Yeah. I think they are good games. Again, Cthulhu Wars, maybe don't buy. Dune also, War for Arrakis, they're expensive games. So try them without needing to buy them because you might not like them. They might not be your cup of tea or whatever the right idiom is. But if you have the chance to play them, definitely give them a try. I think all of them. Should I repeat the list?
Yes.
1 to 10, 10 to 1. You can edit this out.
I'm not going to edit this one out either. Which one do you think, Luis, will be more interesting?
I'll say 10 to 1, okay.
That sounds like a nice way to list it in this case.
All right. And the list of Luis's top 10, you should definitely try. This is the absolute objective list that has no luck involved. Troops on a Map game are 10, Shogun, also known as Ikusa. 9, Cyclades, maybe Legendary Edition according to Jonas is better, but he also says that you shouldn't try it. 8, Dune War for Arrakis. 7, A War of Whispers. 6, Small World. 5, Cthulhu Wars. 4, Kemet, Blood and Sand. 3, Ankh. 2, Root. And 1, Inish. And that is all. That is our episode. We want to thank you for your time. Our next episode is airing in 2 weeks. In the meantime, you can visit boardgameok.com for more information about the show.
Kuulemme siinä.